content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Sonia Usech-Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month, we will introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. Our guest today is Matt Towler. Let me tell you about this wonderful man. Matt Towler is the executive director at Woodland Terrace, a Kisco senior living community. Woodland Terrace offers independent living, assisted living, and memory care opportunities. Matt has been in the senior living industry for 20 years and has worked his way up the management ladder during that time. Matt is originally from Central Virginia. He went to college at Old Dominion University, located in Norfolk, Virginia, where he earned his Bachelor of Science degree in exercise science. After college, he spent 5 years in the hospital industry, working in cardiac rehabilitation, community health, and community outreach. After that, he made the best decision of his career and took a job in senior living. Matt started off as wellness director, which means he oversaw the programming activities which focused on a 6 dimensions of wellness approach. They are physical, spiritual, emotional, vocational, social, and intellectual wellness. From there, he moved up the leadership ranks to the role of executive director. As executive director, he functioned as the CEO of the community, overseeing all operations. He lived in the Tidewater area of Virginia for more than 15 years and met his beautiful wife, Christina, there. Together, they have 3 amazing daughters spanning the ages of 25, 16, and 10. Matt likes to joke that he lost the voting majority in his house a long time ago, as even the pet dog is female. Matt and his family have lived in North Carolina for over 8 years. In his free time, Matt loves spending time with his ladies. They all love the outdoors, especially the pool and beach during warm months. They also enjoy all the great hiking trails around the Triangle. Matt is a big sports fan. In addition to his alma mater, Old Dominion, his favorite teams include the Chicago Bears and, of course, our local Carolina Hurricanes. Welcome to Community Connections. We are so pleased to have such a dedicated person who respects the abilities of seniors no matter what their address is.
Thank you, Sonia. It's an absolute pleasure to be here with you today, and thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of Community Connections. I'm glad to be able to share my knowledge on senior living and how that's evolved over the years, and hopefully it can help someone out who's looking to make a decision in senior living in the near future.
Well, we will get to all of that. So let's start with this. Residential settings for older people with health problems, ranging from ordinary boarding homes to philanthropically funded organizations, often called homes for the aging, like the Hebrew Home for the Aged in Westchester, New York. That's where my aunt and uncle lived out their lives. And those organizations were in existence before Medicare and Medicaid were enacted, I believe in 1965. Can you give us a brief overview of that setting and how nursing homes evolved from those places of care to assisted living facilities?
Sure, thank you. So with a lot of those communities, the home for the aged, as you mentioned, or rest homes is a common terminology that may have been used in the past, those organizations really evolved from a medical and clinical need for individuals to have a nursing presence there around the clock to support their needs. It's something that hospitals weren't set up to provide a long-term care setting like that. And so organizations like the Home for the Aged and for the predecessor to nursing homes were established. Through the years, they became more of a facility or clinical-based setting. We've seen that change more to a more hospitality setting over the years. So if you look up for kind of a timeline, diagram. You can start off with kind of the home for the aged and that kind of facility setting, and then that morphed into a rest home or nursing home setting. And today, those type of organizations are called skilled nursing facilities. And you've seen over the time the clinical aspect of those type of organizations kind of turn a little bit more to the hospitality. And that in line is where you see also kind of a divide off from the nursing homes type setting. Really kind of towards the 80s is when it became more prevalent that you saw more of the community type settings where you had organizations like an assisted living start to become more prevalent. And organizations like independent living communities started popping up as well, and then kind of morphed off from that into different areas. And those were more set on looking at individuals that had a need for some type of support, but it really wasn't elevated to the level of where a nursing home traditionally would be doing their skilled around-the-clock nursing needs. There would be maybe lesser need that someone could use to help maybe just with some medication reminders, maybe to help with just some what we like to call activities of daily living, getting dressed, brushing teeth, those sort of things, where they still have some level of independence but need a little bit of support with those things. And you saw the industry change into that. And where today you have almost kind of two different offshoots in the industry. You have the skilled nursing facility, which kind of takes its timeline back to the nursing homes, with this more of a skilled area where you have the clinical resources of nurses around the clock and physicians and those type of things to help someone. And those also began taking on a rehabilitative type stance too, where it's not only the long-term care, but it's the short-term rehabilitation for people to get back home or to get into another setting. Then the other offshoot was to, again, the more hospitality type centered communities where you had your independent living, which is basically very similar to normal apartment style living, with the exception of a lot of resources, a lot of programming activities, a lot of services offered. And from that came spanned off the assisted living, where individuals now need a little bit more assistance with help in certain areas, but still focused mainly on the hospitality being very resident centered and with the things they do. And from assisted living, you also have a kind of a slight dotted line off to what are typically called the memory care communities that help focus on individuals who are working through the challenges that come with dementia and Alzheimer's.
Well, that was more than brief, but very, very informative. Tell me something. Did the government get involved in any of this in any way? Are there guidelines that facilities like Woodland Terrace have to follow?
Absolutely. So whenever you start providing services to this type of scale that as it started and is now expanded to, the government got involved mainly from a regulatory standpoint, making sure to set a standard and an expectation for all communities that provide this, whether it be the nursing home setting or the assisted living or memory care setting. They wanted to make sure that the residents in those settings were getting the proper care they deserve, so they set up standards for them to achieve that. Also, in certain instances, especially with the nursing home setting, the availability to utilize resources such as Medicare and Medicaid, also the government got involved with that and setting up that standard as well. But really the biggest impact the government had was making sure it was everything was regulated and had the correct processes in place to make sure they were meeting the needs of the people who lived there. Just as the government gets involved, a lot of things, so, you know, with the food industry and other industries, this was a big aspect for them as well to make sure things are being done well and that resident rights were being taken into account and proper care was being delivered.
That's good to know, but to know that the residents have rights. So now the greatest population, if my calculations are right, is the elder population. So were they the inspiration for the growth of assisted livings?
I would say yes. You see, over the course of the years, the 65-plus generation continues to grow. And with the aging of the baby boomers, it's going to be the largest, really, demographic group here in the country very shortly. And we're going to have a much larger population above 65 than we ever had previously in the nation's history. So that has definitely spurred a lot of the growth. I think it started off from mainly a need basis and addressing the needs and different aspects of individuals as they go through the aging process. But the growth and the demographics is really what has driven the industry prior to and is most definitely driving the industry today.
All right. So when we think of senior living communities, what age level are we talking about, and how are these communities designed to meet the needs of these residents?
So the age group typically is 65 and older. For the most part, I would say the industry average in independent living, you tend to see the average age be in the mid to upper 70s. In your assisted living and memory care, the average age tends to be more towards the mid 80s. The way the communities have designed themselves, and as they continue to be designed today, even as new ones are being built, is to really focus on touching on all the needs of a resident. And when we think of needs, obviously our first kind of line of thinking goes directly to what the physical or medical needs could be. But that's just not it. All communities now really want to be kind of full person and how they're addressing the needs of other residents. So not only is it the physical and mental needs of the residents, but also the spiritual needs, the emotional needs, the vocational needs, the intellectual needs, the social needs. And so, and being designed in a way that really complements that and provides opportunities for residents to feel like they're getting that kind of whole person experience in the communities. There's so much to, and they're being designed really from a hospitality standpoint that gives them, opportunity to have so much to do. You kind of get to pick and choose the activities you want to take part in and don't, how you want to dine, your menu choices. There's a lot of choice in the communities as well, which I think really lines up with what people are looking for nowadays.
Okay. Well, that sounds like warmth when I think of the word of hospitality that these living facilities want to bring forth. So some of what you said brings me to what we think of as the modern day assisted living facility.
Mm-hmm.
So here's my signature three-part question. When was Woodland Terrace built? How does Woodland Terrace meet the requirements as set forth by government and the needs of the people? And how are the needs of this kind of group diversity, the needs of those people met? Since you mentioned you have 65, mid-70s, 80s, how is everything met? What kind of staffing do you have?
Well, thank you. Yes, so Woodland Terrace is actually celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. It opened in the year 2000. It was built by Kisco Senior Living and still owned by Kisco Senior Living. It was built, in the most part, as the campus is currently now. There was an expansion done about 10 years ago to add some more cottages to the community. Our community consists of independent living, assisted living, and memory care. In total, that's 184 apartments across our campus here. We have 80 apartments in our main independent living building, everything from a studio to a two-bedroom, two-bath. We have 24 cottages that are on our campus that are part of our independent living that have two-bedroom, two-baths, and two-car garages. Then we have our assisted living building, which has 36 apartments in that area. That has everything from either a studio setting or a one-bedroom setting or what we call one-bedroom deluxe. It gives you a little extra room as well. And then we have our memory care setting, and there's 44 licensed beds in our memory care section, everything from a companion suite to a semi-private or a private suite.
That's impressive. You house many, many people. So are there couples or are they just single people?
So you find a wide variety. You really do. You find everyone from the single individuals or widowed individuals to our couples. We also have some extended families living together. We've had sisters living here before, brothers living here together before. We have some couples that have a adult child that also lives with them that meets our criteria and has some special needs. So it's really a wide mix, and I think that's what also makes the community so great. There's so much diversity.
Okay. So you said that there are independent living, assisted living, and then the memory care. I've heard
Yes.
the term continuum of care. What does that exactly refer to?
So continuum of care is being able to provide a care package or care services that allow someone to go through the different stages of aging. I think if we all were given our opportunity of what we'd pick for our aging process, we all like to be independent up until our last days, but sometimes that doesn't happen for some individuals. So by saying that our community provides a continuum of care, it means that someone can move in as independent living, and then as their needs change, move to our assisted living, and if the needs change again, they could move into our memory care setting. So while their needs may change, they can still stay in the same campus and be able to move throughout the community and still call Woodland Terrace their home. So whenever a community mentions a continuum of care, that's what they're talking about, that ability to stay on the campus while their needs may change over time.
Well, that sounds very reassuring, and I'm sure to the residents and their families. Are there any special services other than, say, the memory care? Are there any other special services that you can offer the residents? For instance, say somebody needs a kosher meal. Can you provide that?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of different services we provide. And so whether it be some meal choice to your question, if someone wanted a kosher meal, we could work to that. If someone is on a low-sodium diet and wants to try to lower their salt intake, we can work with them on that. If they're trying to eat a more Mediterranean, heart-healthy diet, we definitely have opportunities for them to be able to have those choices. If they're vegetarian, we have enough choices on our menus, on our daily menus, where they can make vegetarian choices and keep that lifestyle as well. So whether it be in dining, as we use that example, when it comes to our activities or programs that we like to call wellness, you have choices, whether it be physical activities, whether it be intellectual activities, or just fun kind of social activities. We do a wide variety of those. We have group exercise classes. We also have an actual gym and swimming pool on site, so you can utilize those on your own, or we have classes involved with those as well. If you're a card player, we have poker clubs and canasta clubs and bridge clubs. If you enjoy book clubs, we have that. If you enjoy gardening, we have gardening clubs. So there's a lot of different services and opportunities for individuals. And we also partner with other groups that if some of the services they may need are more along the care-based line, but they're not quite ready to go to assisted living, but maybe they live in our independent living, we partner with local home care organizations to provide some intermediate care until they are ready for assisted living to keep them as independent as long as possible.
That's fabulous.
We also provide our – I'm sorry?
I said that's fabulous.
Yeah. And we also partner with groups to try to make, as we like to say, a carefree lifestyle. So we partner with a group called Doctors Making House Calls, who, true to their name, actually comes to our community 3 times a week and visits their residents. So the residents sign on as their primary care provider with this group. So they get doctor's visits right here on site. We have physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy right here on site. So we try to provide as much of a carefree lifestyle and meet all their needs on site as we can.
Well, I was going to ask you about a typical day, but you seem to have explained that in your last comments. So you have the dining, you have the book clubs, you have the activities, and do you do yoga there?
We do, and we do some Tai Chi, too. Those all are all available, either by an instructor, one of our staff that instructs, or we bring in an instructor or use a video instructor. So we make sure those are available as well.
Okay. Let's move on a little bit. In many of my interviews with folks in the community who are making a difference, the word passion is usually mentioned. Tell our listeners, please, what strikes a chord in you about this seemingly necessary ingredient for success?
Passion is a great word, and it's so very important. Another word we like to use at Woodland Terrace is culture. So our culture and our passion here at Woodland Terrace, and I think you'll find it across the senior living industry, is that our focus is always one-centered, and that's on our residents, making sure they have the best opportunity each and every day to do what they want to do, get the support they need, and have a truly great experience. Earlier in our discussion, you mentioned the word warmth. And one of the things we like to create here at Woodland Terrace is that warm family feeling, so that you feel it's a very home-like feeling. And we want to encourage that. And that only comes through if you have passionate staff that truly care and are looking to do the best they can. And that's so important to us. And we call it part of our culture. We have a little tagline we like to call Make a Difference Every Day. And every day we come to work, our goal is to make a difference in the lives of our residents when we come to work. And if we achieve that, then we're doing exactly what we should be doing, and our residents are happy and enjoy living here. And that's our most important benchmark, really, is their satisfaction and their enjoyment of being in our community.
I have just a couple more questions as the time is moving along. We can hardly avoid talking about the coronavirus and the impact it had on so many people in North Carolina. Can you give me just a little bit of information about how the coronavirus has hopefully not affected the residents at Woodland Terrace specifically, but what precautions have you introduced to keep everyone safe?
Absolutely, and you're completely right. It's hard not to mention the word coronavirus nowadays in any conversation. And coronavirus is definitely has impacted all of our lives. It's definitely had a large impact on the senior living communities and nursing homes and so forth throughout the country. And it's caused us all to kind of relook at how we do our operations and what things are we doing to keep our community safe. Our number one top priority is and always will be the health and well-being of our residents and our staff. So we've had to kind of get used to what the new normal is and take a really strong approach in following the state guidelines, the CDC guidelines, and all those new criteria that we have to follow to do that, to keep our community safe. The one thing that we've been very conservative on is making sure we're following the science and following what the CDC is telling us, as well as our local and state regulators, is what we should do. And we've been very lucky and blessed at Woodland Terrace. It doesn't take much to turn on the news to see how some of the senior living industry and community have had some very difficult times with this. But Woodland Terrace, we've been very lucky and have done a good job keeping our community safe with very, very few cases and very little spread at all. So biggest thing is we've had to, put in a lot of community-wide protocols that help keep the residents safe, help keep our staff safe. You know, the tough part is we've had to limit who we can let come to the community. Families of residents haven't been able to visit a whole lot over the course of the coronavirus just because that's what we had to do to keep people safe. We have a lot of screenings that we put in place for anyone who does come into our buildings. We do things like you hear about on TV. We conduct temperature checks and ask questions and make everyone wear personal protective equipment. I think we all probably feel like a mask has now just become a new part of our wardrobe because, that's a vital piece of what we wear every day here at work as well. And, of course, gloves and everything else. One thing that we've done differently, I'd love to be able to share that we've done differently at Woodland Terrace, is we have been very proactive on the testing at our community. We feel that's helped us really keep coronavirus out and keep our community safe. We're using a very unique COVID-19 testing strategy that helps create a safe bubble in our communities. If you watched any of the recent NBA or NHL playoffs and how they were bubbling, as they like to use the term, those teams to keep them safe, we're using the same testing mechanisms that they were using. It's a saliva-based COVID test that we test all of our staff twice a week to make sure they're negative. And we test our residents once a week. And then we're also testing any residents who may have to leave the community on a frequent basis. We're going to start testing them twice a week soon. So we're doing this to help kind of create our own little safe bubble around the community and keep our community safe and hopefully eliminate some of the stricter protocols we've been able to put in place because we're able to know with greater confidence whether we have any cases in the community or not.
Well, leadership comes from the top. And you are the leader at Woodland Terrace. And from what you're telling me, I am assuming that your staff is cooperative and that the residents are the beneficiaries of all of the precautions you have taken to keep them and your staff safe. And I'm happy to know that you have done that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, we still have a few minutes left, and I have a difficult subject to broach with you.
Sure.
What should family members consider when they are contemplating the idea of community living for their loved one? And even more importantly, how can the subject be broached? We have about 4 minutes left.
Sure. I'll start with what families should look for. First and foremost, they take a good look at the situation that they're in and kind of get a good gauge on what kind of living situation they're looking for. Is it independent living? Is it assisted living? Is it memory care? Is it a skilled setting? And then let that guide you from there. But really, some of the things that you want to look for is location. Is it going to be convenient for family to come visit and to stay engaged with them? Is it the size of the community? Some people thrive in larger communities. Some people thrive in smaller communities. Mm-hmm. What is the best community setting for that individual? The culture, how does the community feel when you go visit? What kind of feedback and touch are you getting from the staff when you visit them? Are they warm and friendly? Are they outgoing? And then obviously, you know, it's one, some could say it could be at the top of the list, but it's obviously one that has to be considered too, is cost. You know, obviously there's different costs involved with that. There are some senior living settings that have some work with Medicaid and those types of settings, but a lot of them are private pay. So what is your budget for that type of thing, and how can you what level can you afford? Those are all important things to take into account.
And how do you tell mom that it's time she stopped cooking in her own kitchen?
Yeah, there's been a lot of studies, and I read one a while back that said having the talk with an adult parent about the need to give up the house and move to a community like ours is tougher and more anxious driven than having to talk with your teenager about the birds and the bees. It is a difficult decision because in some ways you are taking away what's familiar to that individual, their home, their living setting and those type of things. So, you know, it's one of those very just honest and open conversations that you have to have with the example you use, whether it's an adult child talking with their parent, that it's time to look at one of those communities and just have that really, really open conversation about it and understand that it's not something that they're doing for their detriment. It's trying to give them the benefit of having the best life they can in any situation and looking for to get them into a setting that gives them the opportunity to have the best they can have, where they maybe don't have to worry about cutting the grass or worry about keep the upkeep of the house and those type of things. So it's a tough conversation, but it's one that has to be done with honesty, empathy for what the situation is, but most importantly, what's best for that individual.
Okay. Just give us the website or the phone number so that anybody listening who needs your services can contact you. The phone number.
Absolutely, and thank you for allowing me to do that. So if anyone is interested in Woodland Terrace, please give us a call at 919-465-0356. Or you can find us on the internet at www.lifeatwoodlandterrace.com.
Well, Matt, you have been a most charming and informative guest. Thank you so much for sharing all this wonderful information with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Sure, Matt. Okay. We've run out of time for this month's episode of Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Sonia Usech-Kuhn for the North Carolina Reading Service. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.